Okay. It's December 1st, 1998, and this is an interview with Sister Mary Kramer. I wanted to begin with your childhood, and I wondered if you could tell me about your family and where you grew up.
Okay. I was born in a neighborhood that is changed over the years called Albany Park. And my mother and father built our home there in 1913. And it gives me pleasure to go back because the home still looks good on the corner of Ainsley and Christiana. So my mother and father came from South Bend. We didn't have many cousins around or relatives in Chicago, and used to go to South Bend. I went the first 2 years to Hibbard School, and I was so amused recently that school that goes back that far, the area is so crowded, they are building an addition to my first elementary school. I think that is hilarious.
And then from, where did you go to high school?
I went to the Immaculata, which was taught by the BVM sisters. I started at Hibbard, and then we went for 1 year to California, where most of the Kramers had emigrated. But for various reasons, we're the only ones of the Kramers that came back to the Midwest. So when I came back, the Catholic school was Our Lady of Mercy. It was 10 blocks away, kind of a long walk, but anyhow, I graduated from there. And at that time, about half of the graduates went to the Franciscan High School in Alvernia, and half of them went to this new, fairly new BVM school, Immaculata. The building still stands at Irving Park in the lake, but our sisters have not been there for quite a while.
I need to back up. I'm sorry. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have one sister, and happily, she married and gave me all these wonderful nieces and nephews, who in turn have given me grandnieces and nephews, even a third generation of a great-grandnephew, who was two. So, the two of us grew up, we are very different, and we talk about our differences. She was a little tomboy, she had a train, she had a wagon, teddy bear, and I was a prissy little girl. I liked tea parties and dolls.
And now you mentioned, which is very important, you were in the first class at Mundelein.
Yes, I was. When I was a senior in high school, I finally decided I had a vocation to the BVMs. So I approached my family. Well, my mother thought I was too young. So I was agreeable about it, but she was not opposed to it. So I thought, well, I'll go to this new college that the BVMs are opening up here on the north side, Mundelein College. So I did. And it was a very, very exciting year because the freshmen were over 200, and there were approximately 32 juniors or sophomores who had transferred, and a few less of juniors. So naturally, the freshmen ran the whole school. At least we thought we did. I brought along my yearbook, and we can talk about a few of the events that took place then.
Sure.
One of the things that when you look at this yearbook, it is amazing that in 1 year they produced so many organizations. Every class, of course, had class officers. And I had the role of secretary for the freshman class. Then the second semester, they decided to have a student council. And I became treasurer of that. I sound like the organization woman. One of the things that attracted me was the debate club. So I became president of the debate club. But all of the clubs were simply fascinating. There were so many. There was the Glee Club, of course. There was an orchestra. The Commerce Club. The Mundelein Sicilians, which were singers. The Debating Club. The Home Economics Club. one I can't quite pronounce, the German club, the chemistry club. There were clubs for everything and everyone, and everybody joined something.
Just to back up again just a moment, what made you decide, or what got you interested in becoming a member of the
BVS? Well, first of all, in the beginning of my high school life, it never occurred to me. I was going to be married and have three children. Why three, I'm not quite sure. And I was interested in becoming an interior decorator. My dad was a lawyer. I thought that would be very interesting, to be a lawyer. And then in junior year, I do not even know the name of the priest who gave the retreat, but he certainly made an impression on me. And I felt that I really was called to be a member of the BBMs. My friends were greatly shocked when I didn't tell anyone until the very end that we were leaving in June of 1930. And they were quite a surprise, let's put it that way. apparently they had not seen in me a future BBM.
Interesting. And did you choose Mundelein then? Because of that?
Once you enter the community, you are under the vow of obedience. And in those days, it was quite strict indeed. So my first assignments were in the elementary school. And I have always rejoiced that I started with second grade. Because with second grade, you do not go from A to D. You go from A to B to C. You go right up the line. You take nothing for granted. And over the years, even teaching college students, you take nothing for granted. You fill in all the details.
And the BBMs are very regimented in that way?
Well, I was apparently very impressed by the BBMs. And I had them in high school, so, and then, of course, here in college. So at the, I'd like to tell you a few little things that happened in that first year. One of the most exciting things was the dedication of the college in the spring. We always like to joke about the late Cardinal Mundelein, who gave us his name and a pipe organ. We were on our own for the rest. And the BVMs throughout the whole United States all contributed in many ways to helping to finance the BVM College. We had another college in Dubuque, Iowa, which is still going strong, Clark College. But everybody had a hand in helping Mundelein get started. Then in the spring, we had the dedication of the college, and that was a fine event. The president of the college was a very interesting woman. Her name was Sister Justicia Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y. And the building in which we are sitting now is named after her, Coffey Hall. And she was a woman of great determination. What Sister Justicia wanted, Sister Justicia always got. So during the time of the dedication, she was able to persuade the police department, or the powers that be, to change the traffic so it did not come by Mundelein College and be in the way of the Cardinal's car and that of the clergy who might attend. So they had to be sidetracked while the Cardinal arrived in great splendor. And of course, we had learned all kinds of wonderful songs for the occasion. And a man who is very venerable in the Archdiocese as a choral director was auto singing by then. So, of course, we had him for a director. So that was a momentous occasion.
What do you remember about the building itself?
The building was special and unique. Apparently, the legend has it that the first architect was going to have a building with pillars and a somewhat colonial appearance. And Sister Justicia wasn't happy with that. So a younger man became the architect, and we have this wonderful piece of Art Deco. And when I take you downstairs, you can go over to it one night and see some of the interesting samples of Art Deco right on the first floor of the college. And of course, in those days, a skyscraper college was unique. It's not unique anymore, but it was very unique. And of course, we went to classes on the elevator, and that was exciting. Except you were supposed to walk up the first three or four flights and not expect to use the elevator. And I suppose, looking back now, the discipline was fairly tight. But we enjoyed life. We had a lot of fun. We weren't supposed to go off campus during the time we were there during the day. Occasionally, I would get to have a campus or rather the family car for some reason. And sometimes we would sneak up to Evanston and around Northwestern during the noon hour. Another place that we were not always encouraged to go to was a gathering place, a restaurant under the hill tracks called the Inniday. And the Loyola fellows could be seen at the Inniday, and the Wonderland girls with nowhere to drift over there. We had some interesting experiences with Loyola. We had dances. They were called tea dances because they were in the late afternoon. And the room that is no longer called the social room on the second floor of the college was the scene of these dances. And they were a lot of fun. And then we debated with Loyola too, because we had a debate club. And many of the debates we won. Go ahead.
You spent a year then at Mundelein?
Just a year.
And then you moved to Clark College?
No, I entered the communities that they call the Bishop, the training period for the young novices. It was in Dubuque, Iowa. And in the beginning, my mother had a very dear friend in Santa Barbara, California. So she and my sister and I went out for a rather lengthy visit. And it was time for me to come back, you know, and get my things ready to go. But they were going to have a fiesta out there in Santa Barbara. And my mother thought it was a shame that I would miss this fiesta. So we wrote to the head of the congregation, Mother Isabel, and explained. Well, she said, that's all right, I could be late, but I had to be there by September 18th, because canonically you were supposed to have 6 months as a postulant before you received the habit and your religious name and started the real militia. So I arrived all by myself on September 18th. All the rest of the group was there ahead of me. But they quickly got me into my black poplin that they wore at that time, and I had to settle down very quickly.
And what did the training consist of?
Well, the training was very interesting. They wanted us to become religious women. And so in the beginning, during the 6 months of postulancy, we took college courses, but we also had a great deal of work in theology, which in those days was simply called religion. We learned how to pray the office, which is a set of prayers that come down from the Middle Ages. And you led a fairly strict existence. Silence was rather important. And it's remarkable because everyone, for the most part, seemed to cooperate. And if people weren't happy, they were allowed to go home. And a few of our set, as they call it instead of class, a few of our set did indeed leave. So you were, at the end of the first 6 months, you were received, as they call it, a reception ceremony. You received a habit, and I have to show you a picture of it. They were wondrously made, I must say. the idea of the religious habit comes down from medieval times, and you received your identity. You're supposed to take on a new identity and a new name, the paganness. So I was very devoted to Francis of Assisi. I would like to have had Jane Francis because my sister was Jane. But we had a sister with that name. I would like to have had Teresa Francis. I like the little flower. There was great devotion in those days to the little flower, St. Teresa of Assisi. But we had a Teresa Francis. So the posthumous mistress, as she was called, said there had been a very esteemed teacher by the name of Sister Assisi. Now, isn't that a fearful name? Latin, you know, and Latin had never been my favorite subject. But that's what I became. My best friends did not always know how to spell it. And until modern times in the 60s, after the Vatican II Council, we all had these various saints' names.
So you were called Sister?
Mary Assisi. How about that? And you rarely used your family name. And but after Vatican II, so much of that changed. Things became more natural. Most people went back to their own baptismal names, and things changed a great deal. But at that time, the Dominicans, the Mercies, the Deviants, we were all trained along about the same lines.
How interesting. And during that time, after being at Mundelein for a year and then in your training for a year in Dubuque, your family realized then that...
Oh, yes, they were quite pleased. They really were. And our full training in Dubuque was 2.5 years. So you graduated, as it were, from being a junior novice after you got to heaven to being a senior novice, and then finally a professional novice, getting ready to profess your vows. So you learn many things. During the what they call a canonical year, the junior year, you did not study secular subjects, just religious studies. Then when you were a senior novice, you went back to the classroom and continued your college education. So we were there for 2.5 years, and then we pronounced our first vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience for 1 year. You took temporary vows, as they were called, every year for 6 years. And then at the end of that time, they figured you ought to know your mind. And if you still wanted to, you were allowed to make perpetual vows.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
And then did you attend Clark College?
Well, I did, yes. Actually, my A.B. degree is from Clark. Because we would go to summer school then. In those days, you could teach in the elementary grade without a completing your college education. And so, my first assignment was second grade in the Cathedral Parish in Sioux City, Iowa. I didn't know much about Sioux City, Iowa, but I learned. And while I was there, it was a Cathedral Parish, and we had a wonderful dear man, Bishop Healy, for whom the high school was later named. And he loved ceremony. And I eventually was given charge of the altar boys. I don't know if you have ever seen altar boys in action, but in those days they had a very important part to play. So lo and behold, I learned how to train altar boys. And that was an interesting experience in itself. My second mission was Rapid City, South Dakota, further west. And again, I fell heir to the altar boys. That was a very interesting experience in South Dakota. You have seen pictures of the faces of the presidents on Mount Rushmore. Believe it or not, I was there when they were being carved. they had a Swedish sculptor who had the unusual name of Gutzon Borglund. I never forgot it. And sometimes on the weekend, people might take us out for a ride or a picnic, and we'd go out and we'd be able to watch the progress going on. And so I have great fond affection for Mount Rushmore, part of my history. And then, let's see what happened to me after that. I think by that time, I had finished my AB degree, and I was sent to my first teaching assignment at high school level. And I came back to my alma mater, Immaculata, and I had a freshman program. And it was very, very interesting. Some of the people that I taught there are in our community today. And so it's they like to tease me about some of my little quirks. You know, every teacher has quirks. But it was a very interesting period, and it was a wonderfully exciting school. And then at the end of 5 years, in those days, our community spread from New York to California, a large number in California, a large number in the Midwest, just a few in the East. And so at the end of, since I got the degree, I was prepared to teach high school. So I was sent then to Immaculata. And then much to my surprise, after 5 years, all the sisters were divided into four provinces. And you had a provincial superior who could change you from one place to another, you understand. And you rarely went outside your province. Usually the changes were within your province. But that one year, 1935, I was changed to what was called St. Joseph province. And the headquarters for that was Des Moines, Iowa. So I went from Chicago to Iowa. And it was a very interesting experience. The school I attended, rather taught at, was the St. Joseph Academy that had been built way back in the late 80s. And it had become a central high school, Catholic high school, and the one in the city. The one was not particularly Catholic. And once in a while, I stayed at St. Joseph Academy in Des Moines for 8 years, and it was a very pleasant, very happy time. You know, the school was large, the people, especially the students, were fun. I enjoyed it very much. And then, in 1953, I was changed to Magellan College, where I became a teacher of history and had what they call a freshman program. You were responsible for a group that became your counselees and that kind of thing.
Were you transferred there, or did you request?
I was transferred, yes, indeed. And it was the second major transfer I had, you know, from outside the original province, now and into another province of Magellan College. But it was very interesting to come back to Magellan, where I had got my book with the BBMs. So I taught freshman history. In those days, we all taught religion, and it was not yet called theology, to our homeroom. Well, that was an extra curriculum, or a little extra work, because your degree was in history. And you really had to work mighty hard to be able to stand before those young women and teach in the Catholic religion. And then, much to my amazement, after I'd been here just 2 years, I was appointed Dean of Students. And that was so interesting because Sister Bernarda, who had taught me French when I was a student, she had been Dean of Students for, I believe, 18 years, and she was marvelous. Julia had a wonderful disposition. The students liked her very much. And she had started a mother's auxiliary and a father's club as supports for the college. And to be asked to step into her shoes, was a little scary, let's put it that way. But in those days, if you were told to do something, you didn't argue. You just assumed that God's grace would come down, and believe me, you did it.
Must have been a wonderful teacher, right?
I don't know whether I was a wonderful teacher or not. But I think Sister Bernarda was ready to retire, and I'm not quite sure why I was appointed, but indeed I was. And it was a post that I had for 13 years. It was interesting because the dean of students had some special responsibilities. In those days, every year, there was an annual student benefit, benefit for the college. But it was a major event and a serious event in the sense that you were expected to make a good profit. So it took its form usually in having a performance. So we sometimes had a performance here on campus. Other times it would be at one of the theaters downtown. And we had, these are old names now, we had Emma Williams, who may not be known to be, but he was quite a stellar actor. And we also had Burgess Meredith, another stellar actor. There was a great deal of work involved with these benefits, and all the students had to get involved. And they had to sell tickets, and they had to publicize the event, and it was really a very exciting thing. And usually they were financially successful, which was no small thing. Besides being responsible for the student benefit, automatically the dean of students was in charge of what they call the concert lecture series. And we had a rather small budget. So we had a very good agent who would try to provide us with some good performers. And the students were obliged, and I do mean obliged. It was required to attend all these student assemblies. Some of them they enjoyed, others I think they would cheerfully have seen missed. But there was a little fine imposed on them if they were not in their required seats. The sort of thing that you could in no way expect from students today. But they confessed later on that they really absorbed a great deal from them. So we sort of pushed culture right down their throats.
That was the purpose of that?
Well, yes, to, you know, increase their, rather widen their horizons, provide them with cultural and intellectual experiences. I remember we had a group of Swedish ballet dancers that lived in Oakland, and we had Peter Nero, who was just at the height of his career, and Joan Collins was her fill-in. He would come out on the stage, he was a benefit performer, see. So he would come out and he would sing, but he had had a little recess. So then Joan Collins, who was just beginning her career, would come and sing during the interval. And it gave me great pleasure a few years ago to see the mature Joan Collins out at Ravinia, the beautiful performing place north of Chicago. So that was another duty of the dean of students. And then you always had to supervise the graduation exercises. And nowadays, when you see students throwing their caps up in the air, you know, and all that kind of thing, those of old-timers, we roll our eyes because they walked in step, I'll have you know, to music, stately music. They practiced, the gowns were measured so they could all be equal length on the floor. Who would bother doing anything like that today? You know, it's ridiculous. But they kind of took it for granted. And I must say, the commencements were very beautiful, very dignified. And some of my nieces and nephews tell me other stories about their experiences in modern times.
As Dean of Students, how did you understand the mission of Mundelein College? And what was your goal when you became dean?
That is a very interesting question. Our mission here at Mundelein had been sort of given to us by Cardinal Mundelein, who wanted a city college that would attract young women who might not be able to afford to go away, although many who came could well have done so. But he wanted us to establish a urban and urban college, which we did. And then part of the goals